about Fillmore Street. This is Philpod.com, the week in Georgia, in English, coming to you, finally, from the Lower Haight in the City by the Bay. Today is Thursday, the 24th of August, 2017. On this date, in 79, Mount Vesuvius erupts, burying Pompeii and killing 15,000. 410, Rome is sacked by the Visigoths. 1215, Pope Innocent II declares the Magna Carta to be invalid. 1682, the Duke of York gives Delaware to William Penn. 1847, Charlotte Bronte finishes writing Jane Eyre. And in 1891, Thomas Edison patents the motion picture camera. Yasser Arafat was born on this date in 1933. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. The podcast is written by Robin Bortner. Very sorry there's nothing last week. Too much moving around by the beach. This is a special double version. If you'd like to comment on the forum or ask a question, go to tepeelpod.com or send us an email at tepeelpod@gmail.com. Commemorations marking the 25th anniversary of the Abkhazian War occurred across Georgia last week. The conflict cost lives of around 10,000 people, left more than 300,000 displaced, mostly ethnic Georgians from Abkhazia. Families and friends of those killed in the conflict gathered at Tbilisi's Hero Square on the 14th of August. They were joined by cabinet ministers, leaders of several opposition parties. Most of the official statements expressed a desire for peace and unification. Notably, however, Prime Minister Gyorgy Kvitakashvili used the occasion to blame Russia for keeping Abkhazians and Georgians apart. European Democrats, Chairman Pata Davitaya, also made strong statements saying on Rustavioti that the war is not over and Georgia continues to fight for its freedom and sovereignty. In Suchumi, there were also commemorations. Regional leaders, veterans of the war, and relatives of those killed brought flowers to the Memorial of Glory for a ceremony to mark what they called the Patriotic War of the Abkhaz Nation. Statements made by the officials thanked veterans for defending the territory. On Facebook and Instagram, many Abkhazians users changed their profile pictures to photos of Abkhazian flags with the caption reading, "I am from Abkhazia, and 25 years ago, Georgia started a war to exterminate my people." Campaign mirrors a similar trend last week in Georgia to mark the 2008 war with Russia, with photo captions claiming the country was still occupied by Russia. Also this week, a group of activists, writers, and students from Abkhazia are facing public criticism for participating in a joint project with Georgians. On the 24th of July, they attended a USAID-funded program in Tbilisi called the Preservation of Abkhaz Language by Abkhaz and Georgians, and an anonymous Facebook profile published their personal details. The post accused them of tempting Abkhazians into cooperating with Georgia, and was upset that some materials from the program described Abkhazia as part of Georgia. This led to widespread online discussions, with many accusing NGOs of treason. In response, Liana Kvarchelia from the Center for Humanitarian Programs claimed the post was an attempt to discredit Abkhazian NGOs, which she argues are important because they challenge the unilateral Georgian coverage of events and mitigate the region's isolation. Others in the media called the entire outrage a witch hunt. There are two other Abkhazia-related events of note. First, a delegation of Abkhazian officials traveled to Syria this week to attend the Damascus International Fair and meet with officials in the Assad government, including the Prime Minister Imad Khamis. The goal was clearly to target another regime out of favor with the larger international community, but tight with Russia, to achieve more legitimacy. Economic trade cooperation were discussed. Abkhazia invited the Syrians to return the visit. Abkhazia has taken over 500 Syrian refugees since 2012. Finally, in Abkhazia news, more barbed wire fencing in the 2 hectares has appeared in villages adjacent to the border in the Kurcha Nabekevi district. Georgian Foreign Ministry responded, calling on Russia to cease its aggressive actions and asked the international community to once again condemn the borderization. A massive forest fire has been burning in Borjomi since the 20th of August and has been reduced and localized, but not contained as of about 8 hours ago. Strong winds made it difficult to battle the original grassland fire, and it soon spread to the nearby forest. The winds also helped to spread the fire faster. So far, about 120,000 square meters have been burned. Nearby villages have been evacuated. Fortunately, there have been no casualties reported Several cans of gasoline had been found, making some suspect arson, but police have not yet started a formal investigation. Georgia's Crisis Management Council created a special committee to mobilize all possible firefighters. 300 firefighters have been on the ground since the 22nd of August. 5 helicopters from Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Belarus work from the air. Around 95 Azerbaijani and 70 Armenian firefighters were dispatched to the area as well. And by the 24th, the number of firefighters had grown to 1,500. A volunteer group was also created on Facebook, but it was dissuaded from acting by the government officials, who said that the volunteers would be in danger and complicate the situation. 12 kilometers of new road was paved to both facilitate transportation and contain the fire into sections. Keep order, 250 soldiers under Chief of Staff Vladimir Chachibaya were also dispatched. The United States, Germany, Greece, Romania, and Israel all expressed their readiness to help if needed. Russia also offered to help, but Prime Minister Georgi Kvitakashvili declined, saying Georgia had enough help. Despite these efforts, some locals have been critical of the government for responding too slowly, arguing that a faster response might have contained the blaze. Work on the fire was hamstrung on the 23rd as 5 other smaller fires broke out, burning a total of 30 hectares. All were contained overnight. Currently, the dry weather is being blamed for these fires. The inflamed area has been the recent recipient of reforestation efforts, as it was extensively damaged in the 2008 war. The reforestation campaign, called agadgine.ge, reported that 80% of the 30,000 new trees have been burnt. It pledged to begin again as soon as possible. In addition to the campaign, corporations Pasha Bank, TBC, Borjomi, and Coca-Cola have all pledged to work on the restoration efforts. While firefighters worked in Borjomi, another market fire broke out in Didube on the 21st of August, destroying 40 shops, which sold construction materials and auto parts. Over 100 firefighters worked to put it out. Causes being blamed on both the negligence of the owners and a nearby bakery, but police are still investigating. The uninsured vendors are asking for compensation from the landholding company and City Hall. A spokesman for the company denied responsibility, saying the vendors had been told they were responsible for insurance after a similar fire in 2015. Government has not yet seriously responded to this endemic market fire problem. In a brilliant piece of insightful and original investigative reporting, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project called out the big players in the Georgian sheep industry, accusing the two companies of colluding with the government to squeeze out competition and pass off Armenian sheep as Georgian. Because they are grass-fed, Georgian sheep receive relatively high prices. The report says that in 2008, the number of companies exporting to Turkey and other Arab countries grew to 13 due to this high price. But within 5 years, only 2 companies remain. Suspiciously, those companies are linked to each other and to the Ministry of Agriculture. Some sheep farmers accuse the government of selectively applying bureaucratic roadblocks, such as health tests, in favor of those 2 companies. The Minister of Agriculture at the time, Otar Donelia, denies these allegations. Compounding the problem, a 2015 sheep pox epidemic, which some link to falsely documented Armenian sheep, turned buyers away from importing from Georgia. Currently, many sheep farmers say they can no longer find an export market and struggle to break even. By the way, more and more of this kind of corruption is occurring, and it has taken a new and different form than under Misha. Then, there was plenty of collusion organized at the highest levels of the state. Now, with Bidzina in charge and not really worrying about these kinds of things as a billionaire with no official position, his many minions are setting up arrangements like this. These types of arrangements are sprouting like mushrooms, and so far Utsneba has been ignoring them because they all benefit senior officials in Utsneba. South Ossetian journalist and activist Tamar Marakishvili was detained on the 16th of August while local police searched her house for extremist literature. When pressed, the police could not specify what they were searching for. A computer, documents, and her mobile phone were taken together with business cards and publications of Kurt Vollebach, the former OSCE High Commissioner on National Minorities. She reports that she was questioned about a complaint from a senior member of the ruling United Ossetia Party lodged on the 31st of July, which accused her of violating the dignity and honor of his party. She was released after several hours of interrogation, but must report to the prosecutor's office this Friday. This is not Merikashvili's first time in trouble with Ossetian officials. She was informally questioned 6 times in the second half of 2016 and in June. She was allegedly abducted by South Ossetia Security Services, KGB or FSB. Early reports said she was dragged into a car by men dressed in civilian clothes, and witnesses claimed that the car belonged to the South Ossetian KGB. The purpose of the alleged abduction is not clear, and she has so far abstained from talking about the incident. The detainment of Merikashvili earned the criticism of the Georgian government, who took the opportunity to brand South Ossetia as a corrupt region run by an illegitimate government. Public defender Uche Nanuashvili and parliamentary secretary Anadolize both put out statements calling the detention illegal as it repressed civic rights. Dolize even called for the international community to speak up. 11 civil society organizations, including the hardest-working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia, called on the Georgian government to use all available diplomatic and legal means available to keep the journalist safe. Trump's dodgy business dealings in Georgia are finally making headlines. The story was broken by The New Yorker, Adam Davidson, which published an excellent and exhaustive investigative report into business deals surrounding the once sort of planned Trump Tower in Batumi. Reporters tried to find financial links between Trump and Putin via Kazakhstan's BTA Bank and the Silk Road Group hidden in the complex real estate money laundering deals that it entailed. Adam Davidson's investigation revealed a lot of damning details about both the Batumi project and about the investment firm Silk Road Group, which he heavily suspects of money laundering and embezzlement. The project is clearly tied to the Kazakh bank BTA, which has been since seized by the Kazakh government after its chairman Mukhtar Ablyazov stole up to $10 billion in loans made out to himself that he does not intend to pay back since he's left. If Trump and his companies were not complicit in BTA's international corporate fraud scheme, there must have been willful ignorance or absurd negligence in due diligence not to have seen that corruption was when negotiating the deal, which is, of course, a pattern of how all of Trump's projects work. The New Yorker report was followed by articles from Forbes, including an interview with two of Trump's former cronies trying to relaunch the Batumi Towers as T-Tower and use the ongoing Russia collusion investigation as a way to drum up publicity. In the interview, they laugh and say the business ties are purposely too complicated for anyone to sort out. They're right. A dozen or so other media outlets have tried to do so in the last few weeks, and it's difficult to keep straight without a legal team. The links to some of the better articles will be included in our Things to Read section. Rachel Maddow of MSNBC had a piece on it, as well as an interview with Davidson. Municipal election news. The election date has been set for the 21st of October, starting the official 2-month campaign period. 7 candidates are currently nominated for Tbilisi mayor. This list includes the 5 candidates who announced in July and 2 new ones. Last week, the Alliance of Patriots nominated Irma Inashvili, the parliament's vice speaker. In his acceptance speech, Inashvili called out at Sneba for not reforming the electoral system, claimed that Georgians need to fight for free elections. He accused local mayors of interfering in the election process by manipulating voter lists and intimidating voters for over 25 years. Another party leader predicted that there would be large-scale protests accompanying this year's elections, presumably due to what he sees as an unfair election system. The 7th candidate was named by a coalition of 2 non-parliamentary parties, Free Georgia and Democratic Movement United Georgia. Free Georgia leader Kaja Kukava will run for mayor, while the Democratic Movement's leader, Dmitry Lord Kipanidze, will run for city council chair. The parties promised to serve Tbilisians, but made no specific promises. Finally, the Free Democrats announced that they would not run a candidate this year, saying that the party has been in chaos since it failed to gain parliamentary seats in the 2016 election and currently lacks the resources to compete. By chaos, they're referring to the Free Democrats' leader. Leaders who've quit since 2016, including former Defense Minister Irakli Alassani and Parliamentary Chairman Dato Usupashvili. Usupashvili, who was with the Republicans, as we reported last week, formed a new party that is running its own mayoral candidate. In May, the remaining 3 Democrats tried to form a coalition with the Republican Party for this election cycle, but the deal fell through. In their statement, they said that they would use the time off to prepare for the 2020 elections. Caucus's Research Resource Center, or CRC, updated their ongoing poll regarding people's preferred role of Bidzina if he were in the government. They found the vast majority of Georgians think that he is still involved in the decision-making processes, but that his informal participation is unacceptable due to its unofficial capacity. A quarter of respondents, mostly affiliated with Otsneba, said that they would support his involvement if he had an official position. This number has declined over the past 2 years. Another 56% of Georgians want Bidzina out of government completely. CRC saw these results as a positive indication for Georgian democracy in that the transparency of decision-making processes is widely valued. Link to the survey will be available from the tpeelpod.com website. Update on Mustafa Emre Çabuk, the teacher awaiting extradition to Turkey for ridiculously and highly disputed links to alleged terrorism by the autocratic Erdogan government. Tbilisi City Court has upheld the prosecutor's request to extend his extension for a second time as he awaits his October appeal. The prosecutor's argument was that Çabuk is a flight risk. Extradition detention periods are only for 3 months, but can be extended three times for a maximum of 9 months. A coalition of 15 political parties and NGOs called New Georgia is campaigning to change the name of Moscow Avenue in Tbilisi. They believe that the name is no longer appropriate. They're gathering signatures for a petition in the local neighborhood. As of the 19th of August, there were 500 signatures. So far, a replacement name has not been put forward, but I recommend Obama Prospekti since it's right next to Bush Street. 20 railway workers in Gurjani, a town in Kakheti, are now on hunger strike, which was launched by two men on the 15th of August after being forced to work in another town. The strikers claim that they were not offered reimbursement for the commute and said that their salaries, 500 lari a month, would not be enough to cover the additional cost. After refusing the request to move locations, they claim the company's administration threatened to fire them. Vasil Khorava, the head of infrastructure at Georgian Railways, said he will fire the workers if they do not return. Moreover, he said that workers were offered housing in a railway car and a bus to transport them and that the location shift was included in their new contract. The strikers claimed that they were unaware that the new contract required the location change and denied receiving any offer of any housing, buses, or reimbursement. Members of the new trade union, an independent union established in 2013, supported the strikers and planned to install a new tent outside Georgian Railway headquarters, but were prevented from doing so by the police. This was criticized by Georgia's public defender and Georgian Young Lawyers Association as a limitation on the freedom to assemble. Seven additional trade unions held a solidarity rally on the 17th of August, drawing a crowd of about 50 individuals. They demanded the resignation of two Georgian Railway officials. Parliamentary Secretary Anna Dolidze visited the protesters and offered to mediate the situation, saying that it was equally important to protect labor rights and resolve disputes peacefully. Georgian Railway responded to the demonstration by accusing the protesters of being politically manipulated. 42 GEM Festival employees are suing the government for not paying promised wages. The month-long festival finished on the 14th of August, and the employees report receiving only 100 lari instead of the 500 lari that they say they were promised. The festival, which is jointly funded by the government and a private company, promised to pay the employees full wages in September, but the employees say they don't trust this promise. The Georgian Young Lawyers Association filed on the complaint on the 18th of August. Although historically a success, this year's GEM Fest lost money. Founder Gheorghe Sigoa blamed the low performance and low attendance on bad weather, overly high expectations, and the drug-related death of a young woman reported in July. A law regulating noise levels went into effect on the 15th of August in case of excessive noise deemed above 35 decibels by day and 30 decibels between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m. A citizen can call the police, who will then measure the noise level with a noise level reader. Any individual or company exceeding the limit will be warned first and then fined a whopping 150 lari. Fireworks are included in this ban, with the exception of some holidays. Residents living in Tbilisi's tourist areas have been lodging complaints about the noise from all-night restaurants for years. Three Georgians were hospitalized following an explosion at a gas station in Batumi. Two were seriously burned, and are in critical condition. The explosion started a fire which spread to nearby houses and vehicles. The gas station had no legal permit to operate. The locals had campaigned for it to close for years. Batumi Mayor Gheorghe Ermakov visited the scene and confirmed that the gas station had no relevant permission from Batumi City Hall. He added that the incident will be investigated by the police, but said nothing about further regulation of gas stations. In infrastructure and business, new road in southern Georgia, in the village of Skordza near Akhaltsikhe, was built without drainage and is causing local criticism. Heavy rains already caused flooding problems for the locals. They're worried that the new paved road was not built well enough to solve the problem. They accused the local government of poor planning and cutting corners on costs. In response, a government official said the fears were groundless, and they dug a ditch to operate as a drainage system for the road. They also denied that it was about the money. The 1.3-kilometer asphalt road cost 260,000 lari to build. Tbilisi Mayor Dato Narmania held a press conference to discuss the ongoing renovation of Pekini Street, one of Sabartalo's main arteries. He said that the work is on schedule to be completed by September. Among renovations is a change in the parking system to accommodate more cars, because that's what we need. A 900-meter bicycle lane will also be added. That ought to be uproarious to behold. I look forward to reports from Lexo and Hans on that. Peaches are rotting in Cajete after a bountiful harvest created an excess in supply and drove down prices. Instead of being a blessing, many farmers found they couldn't sell their crops and now face financial problems. Some decided not to pick them to save on labor costs or to throw the unsold products in the river to save the more valuable boxes. Others decided to distill brandy from the remaining stuff. Farmers also said that Azeri buyers, who usually purchase many peaches, came too late, some claiming that they had problems with customs. Gela Khanishvili, the deputy agriculture minister, said the problem was on the Russian border, not the Azeri border, as Russia had increased import duties. These custom issues are now resolved, but it's too late for the farmers. A juice plant run by the company Kula has promised to open this year and buy 500 tons of peaches, but it did not fully open because crucial equipment arrived too late. Farming cooperative was also discussed, but did not materialize. OC Media, who reported the story, says the overall excessive harvest remains the true source of the problem, as exports were up 55% from last year. Government of Georgia and the World Bank have just signed a new agreement that is said to support Georgian reforms and help the private sector increase its competitiveness. As a result of the agreement, Georgia will receive a credit line of about 44.6 million euros from the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, IBRD. The vice president of the bank spent a week as a tourist in Georgia this summer with an eye for how he could help development. He said the bank will cooperate with a partnership fund for tourism development, especially wine tourism. Transportation is the main area that needs attention, he said, and roads and railways need to be improved. Azerbaijan's low-cost airline Buta Airways is starting flights from Baku to Tbilisi. Until October, it will simply replace the flights currently offered by Azerbaijan Airlines. Between the 29th of October and 24th of March, flights will increase from 10 to 14 times weekly. The Ministry of Refugees report that 379 foreigners have asked for asylum in Georgia in the first half of the year. Iraq had the highest number with 67, Turkey had 41, Egypt 40, Iran 38, India 24, and Russia 22. The rest came from a wide variety of countries. Total number is slightly down from previous years. So far, 169 of the cases were refused, and many other cases are pending. Agenda.ge reported some good news for internal refugees. 58 Georgian families dislocated due to natural disasters have been granted flats in the new apartment building in Batumi. 3 million lari building was funded by Ajada's finance ministry. This is the 11th building for internally displaced migrants to open since 2013. A total of 447 families have been housed. Outside of Ajada, last month, the Georgian Ministry of Internally Displaced Persons bought an additional 40 flats last month to plan for future refugees and to help those living in poor conditions. Ministry of Education and Science announced that selling unhealthy food in school buffets will be prohibited from September. Targeted foods are those which contain a large amount of salt, like chips or sugar like fizzy drinks. The next step, the minister said, will be privatizing school buffets and encouraging the companies to deliver healthy food. That makes sense. Privatizing and then encouraging companies to deliver healthy food. Great. Fruits, vegetables, and other organic products. He did not say how the ministry envisioned regulating these companies to ensure that they deliver healthy food, which is sometimes more expensive. As an additional step to promote healthy food in schools, the ministry started a program to distribute free apples to students in Tbilisi schools every week until December. This program has received some criticism for being futile, too expensive, and goofy. The 19th century art villa Gurikula, a central Georgian hub for local and visiting artists 60 kilometers from Tbilisi, has begun renovations to its facade and iconic belfry. The renovation is funded by the National Agency for Cultural Heritage Preservation of Georgia and TBC Bank. Tbilisi-based Polish engineer Vasil Bulgarski built the village in 1885 as a summer residence. The estate includes a functioning farm with a wine cellar, grape press, and Kvevedi wine storage vessels. It served as a school during the Soviet period and was transformed in 2000 into its current form by painter Kataman Kuteteladze. Since then, the building has hosted a variety of artistic events, including the annual Nova International Contemporary Arts Festival dedicated to the brothers Kirill and Ilya Zadovich, two 20th century avant-garde artists. Georgia National Environment Agency, the Tbilisi State, and Tbilisi State University are launching a new project to monitor glaciers using unmanned aerial vehicles, meaning, of course, drones. Glaciers in the basins of the two rivers in Guri and Rioni are the target. High-resolution images will be compared against historic maps to identify the dynamic of changes in the glaciers. The aim of the project will be to assess the situation and work to prevent potential national disasters, and, of course, climate change. New conference hall at the medical recreational resort Bioli was opened this week by Prime Minister Kvitikashvili and the mayor of Davos, Switzerland, Darius Kavezel. Several Swiss businesses have invested in the conference hall, and the Swiss mayor was visiting Georgia on their behalf. He's also using the trip to search for more opportunities to increase Swiss-Georgian economic cooperation. The Bioli faculty has been open since 2016, and being only 20 kilometers southeast of Tbilisi, has attracted visitors interested in alternative medicine and wellness. Four films by Georgian directors are competing to represent the country's bid for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film this year. The shortlist includes the already acclaimed feature My Happy Family and the Berlinale premiered Hostages by Rezo Giginashvili. Also on the list is Anna Urushadze's first feature, Scary Mother, and Beijing Film Festival winning Luca. The Georgia National Film Center has a commission which will choose a winner by the end of the month. Tbilisi is hosting Group 1 qualifying matches of UEFA Women's Championship League. Turkey, Slovakia, Lithuania, and Georgia are competing in this group. Georgia is represented by the Kutaisi club Matrve, which lost its first match 5-0 against the Turkish team. Qualifying matches are being played until the end of August in the Michal Meskhi Stadium and the David Petrakashvili Arena, and the finals will be held in Kiev in early September. This year's International Science Olympiad winners were given a state reception by Prime Minister Kvitikashvili on the 11th of August. In total, the student team claimed 14 medals for maths, informatics, physics, chemistry, and biology. Medal-winning students received diplomas of gratitude for representing Georgia with honor. Parliamentary news, Otsneba resumed discussions on constitutional amendments with the opposition on the 18th of August. The discussion is the preparation for the meeting with the Venice Commission on the 6th of September, which will be the third and final hearing of the amendments. UNM agreed to participate, but still strongly opposed. European Georgia also agreed, saying that they were open to constructive discussion, but considering how Otsneva pulled the wool over everybody's eyes by delaying everything, the implementation for another 7 years, it's a little ridiculous. The meme this week is a series of night shots of the Borjomi fire taken by Star FM. The drama of the fire is made from many incredible images, several more of which are also found in Facebook, in the Facebook album by civil.ge. Stuff to read, the Ground Truth Reporting Project, a nonprofit news organization focusing on narrative journalism, has been running a project called Sphere of Influence about post-Soviet countries. Researcher Mariam Saleh published 4 in-depth articles which expertly weave local stories into the geopolitical narrative. 4 sections are on life in the villages surrounding Gori and what it means for Georgia-Russia-Western relations, on Tbilisi's burgeoning civil society movement, how residents of the Punkizi Gorge are trying to change the narrative surrounding their home, and local efforts to improve life in Lower Nikosi. They're worth reading and quite interesting. I gave an interview with Georgia Today on the legacy and future of Saakashvili. While there's a possibility to stay in America or in Lithuania, those options are probably not what he's looking for, but Misha doesn't really have too many options. Things aren't looking too great for a return to Ukraine or Georgia anytime soon, unless he changes his attitude. Radio Free Europe produced a survey analyzing Eastern European opinions on moral issues, or things that are considered moral issues by Eastern Europeans, drugs, alcohol, and sex. Of the 9 countries surveyed, Georgia unsurprisingly scored on the more conservative end, especially concerning, amazingly, premarital sex. Armenia topped the conservative end of the charts for most issues, followed closely by Moldova. The Baltic states were at the so-called liberal end. Radio Free Europe also produced a long feature about the proposed constitutional amendments, arguing that they reflect deep divisions between Osneva and other political parties. Largely, it's a holistic overview of the recent political climate and tactics. Nothing new for those who've listened to us, but good for someone who wants to get up to speed. BBC is producing a podcast series about the Black Sea, and there is an episode focusing on Abkhazia. It looks at contemporary life for everyday Abkhazians, examines how their isolation has affected them. However, it has received some criticism from Georgians on being loose with its terminology about the region. Middle East Eye also reports on Abkhazia, saying that the EU deliberately suppressed a poor human rights report for political reasons. It accuses the EU of being hypocritical for its tough talk on Iran, even as it deliberately turns a blind eye to Abkhazia due to its relationship with Georgia. Food blog Culinary Backstreets features Betsy's Hotel this week. They give the history of the place and rightly characterize its Friday night happy hour as a place where the been around forever expat crowd networks and relaxes. All this stuff to read is posted on our forum. This week's dive bar number is 637. That is the number of glaciers in Georgia. They comprise a total area of 355 square kilometers. Most of the glaciers are from peaks over 4,500 meters. The annual One Caucasus Music Festival is taking place this weekend in Marnauli between the 24th and 27th of August this year. The festival will host participants from more than 15 countries. The goal of the festival is to increase cooperation and understanding in the region. Marnauli was chosen as it is near the border of Armenia and Azerbaijan and is known for its long peaceful cohabitation. If you are in Tbilisi and listening to this on Friday, go there now because it'll be cool. Works by contemporary Georgian and German visual artists on display in Batumi at the State Art Museum of Ajad until the 3rd of September. The exhibit hopes to show parallels in themes and styles in order to mark 25 years in diplomatic relations and 200 years of friendship, which began with German immigrants coming to Georgia. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is @txtbuk. Our email is theopod@gmail.com or post the form on our website, www.theopod.com. And we will finish with, from 1963, Greenwich Village itself in New York City. This is the Village Stompers and Washington Square.